Well, this piece is called Lick My Love Pump.
I don't like it.
Young men fighting, look at your women crying, look at your young...
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 44 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a great show for you today. But before we get into the nitty-gritty of what we're going to be discussing, I want to first talk about Secret Cinema. So, Mark, this past weekend, you went to the latest Secret Cinema event, which I believe was it covering 28 Days Later?
It certainly was, yeah. It was in a secret destination, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because I know it's still on for about another 3 weeks, but I can say that they've upped their game to another level, which was totally mind-blowing. It was insane.
Well, you know, don't juice me up and leave me dangling. You've got to tell me more than that. Spoiler alert for those of you who are thinking of going. If you are going to go and don't want to be spoiled, skip to the next segment. Tell us a bit more. What was
okay,
it like?
So there's a massive, massive factory warehouse that's been turned into basically a hospital where mm-hmm. they're operating on people that might have been infected. As you go in, everyone is in coats. You have to wear the coats as well. Everyone's in gear, protective mouth gear, everything. And not one person is not in character. As you're rushed in, you're lying on a hospital bed and they're literally asking you to drink a shot of something to test your blood, mm-hmm. which is mental. and then suddenly, before you know it, the whole place has been invaded by people that are infected. So you're walking down streets and there's burnt out cars, there's people lying on the floor. As you're walking through corridors, there's glass smashing and people grabbing you and pulling you. And
wow.
It is terrifying.
How does it compare to the last one? How does it compare to Back to the Future?
Just a little bit different.
Yeah, yeah.
I was loving
on
the
terms
sunshine.
Of scale, I guess.
It was not as big as Back to the Future, but the detail was on a whole new level. Like, literally, at one point, you go and get some food and a bit of a drink, and then suddenly there was a rave on, and you're in this big main room where everyone's dancing. And I'm not one for dancing, but for some reason I found myself dancing and getting involved and just on this dance floor. The next thing you know, there's water being sprayed like blood on everybody. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound like something you get involved, but it was just insane. 1,000 people in this small like warehouse. And then the next thing you know, you're all going into this big kind of lab. You're all on these separate beds, and then screens come out of the ceiling, massive, huge screens, and start showing you the film. And while you're watching the film, people are smashing glasses, all the windows and lights are in sync with the actual film. Mind blown.
Sounds insane.
It was incredible. And people saying it's expensive, I would have paid £200-300 for a ticket of this event. It was mind blowing.
What's actually happened is they've done none of this.
It was
it's
a dream.
It's just that shot that they give you at the start of it. Yeah. LSD, crack.
Yeah, and then you just wake up and you're like, wow.
So yeah. have you now got like a Secret Cinema loyalty card? Have you got two punches in your card now? Do you get your next one free?
I am, but the next one's Dirty Dancing, so I don't know what they're going to do for that.
Well, Patrick Swayze won't be there.
No.
Moving swiftly on. So we've got a great show coming for you, as I've said. Our main review this week is Captain America 3 Civil War, which we are all intensely excited about. The reviews have been unanimously great. So,
but ours is the only one that's going to matter. So,
well, don't worry.
Always.
Standard. Mark, do you want to tell them what our rewatch is this week?
This is Spinal Tap.
Oh, hell yes. And Adam, do you want to tell them what our topic of conversation is?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about people that had kind of a mixed bag for a year. Actors, directors, actresses, whatever you want to do, writers, anything. Mm-hmm. People that did one good thing or one exceptional thing and one absolute piece of garbage. The example I gave at the time was, of course, Eddie Murphy for Dreamgirls and Norbit.
Yeah. Norbit.
Which we've all got in our list, I assume. No, we vetoed it, didn't we?
We said
we can't have that.
It was too easy.
It was too obvious.
Easy.
Yeah, big time. And we're also going to be skipping back in time to 1986 and playing the second round of our latest quiz, The Imitation Game. So, let's get started.
Mm-hmm. So as we just said there, topic, it's going to be your top three in your mixed bag year. So as I said, actors, actresses, you know, directors, writers, anything you wanted to choose within the world of cinema who had mixed bag years. People who did one thing that was good and one thing that was bad. Of course, on the other extreme, one thing that was amazing and the other thing that was just absolutely dire.
Yeah.
Now, I want to know, did you guys set yourself any rules here? Was there anything you wanted to do when you were researching this?
Well, I did, because what I did initially is I was looking at the IMDb year. So I was looking for two things that happened in 2013 or two things that happened in 2011 or whatever, and I found that was too restrictive. Mm-hmm. So the rule I've applied is if the two films were released within a 365-day span, that counts.
Yeah, I was happy. I'm happy to accept that as well. Yeah. I think it was a bit restrictive just to say 2013 as a year. You could quite easily say, I'll make an argument for something that was released in January 14 and something that was released in, you know, literally August 13.
I think is pretty much what happened with Norbit and Dreamgirls. Yeah. One was 1 year, one was the other. But
it was Oscar year, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were within a few months of each other.
The only thing I did was... I went on IMDb and looked at really good actors that I really liked and then just looked at their whole filmography and was like, oh yeah, they did do that piece of shit, brilliant, and then hoped it was around the same time. But I think one of mine might be out by about a week, so I'm going
to... I don't know about that.
I'm going to have it anyway.
Is it Thomas Hayden Church, by any chance? So let's kick this off then. Mark, come on, we'll start with you.
Well, someone we mentioned on the podcast a lot, Keanu Reeves. Mm-hmm. I thought he came back on the scene really well in 2014 with John Wick. Mm-hmm. I love that film. I think it's a really, credit where it's due, it's outstanding throughout.
Yeah,
it was a role that seemed to be quite tailor-made for him as well.
It was
right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And he wasn't that wooden in it, to be fair to him. He was obviously, I don't anyone think anyone died that week in his life, so he was pretty upbeat and on it.
Well, that's always a plus, isn't it?
But then the year later, he came out and brought out Knock Knock. Now, I don't think you two have seen
film. Knock Knock.
No. Is it an Eli Roth film?
Yes, and it is atrocious. It's one he plays Evan in it, and it's one of the worst films I've ever seen, and that's not just saying that. I actually mean it. I had to nearly turn it off. I did it because... people said, oh, it's Eli Roth returned to form. He's done a really good horror. Yeah, that's why, this is what I'm saying. You know?
That's exactly what people were saying. You know, Eli Roth's back.
Yeah, he's not. He's still in the shit. And I've noticed he's done Cabin Fever remake and stuff. He's really just jumping on the... He's run out of ideas.
Yeah.
But Knock Knock is absolutely atrocious. And for me to go from such a good... yes, he's back. And genuinely, Keanu Reeves is a good role to then utter dog shit.
Mm-hmm.
Is not acceptable.
Yeah.
And his acting in Knock Knock reminds me of the reason why we give him such a hard time for the Matrix films and all the shit he's done in the past. And luckily, this is a bit of a U-turn. I hear that John Wick 2 is coming out next year.
It is.
And as long as he takes on what he did originally and acts again with some bloody enthusiasm and a bit of drive, I'm looking forward to it right now.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to John Wick 2.
If they do Knock Knock 2, I'm not going to...
It'll literally be a year after. Yeah. He'll do that as well.
I worry that going back to the well, I kind of think John Wick did its thing and should just sign off happily. I don't think there needs to be a sequel, but hell, I'll watch it.
I mean, I don't know. Look at Taken.
A magnificent franchise.
I reckon there'll be a Taken 4 one day and they'll just take his virginity.
He's got a kid!
It's bum virginity.
Brilliant. I don't know why this is happening.
Right, move on.
Yeah. Ben, go on. What's yours?
I think I've got one that might be fairly popular. One or both of you might have this. I've gone for Eddie Redmayne.
Nope.
In November of 2014, he released The Theory of Everything, in which he was brilliant and won an Oscar, I believe.
Yeah, we
all enjoyed that film, didn't we? Did we review that? I think we did, didn't we?
We didn't review it.
We just all watched it in our own time together,
And that was a great performance and rightly won in the Oscar. 3 months later, in February 15...
It's in my list as well. I think we've probably gone for the same two films. Yeah.
Go on, tell them then, Adam. What's the other one?
Jupiter Ascending.
Of course it is. It's one of the hammiest, worst villain performances you've ever seen. He literally just needed a moustache to twirl. That's how villainous he was being, like Dick Dastardly or something. It was atrocious. It's kind of funny. If Jupiter Ascending were a comedy... you'd sit there and watch, this is brilliant. He's a hilarious parody villain.
But it wasn't a comedy. But that way at all, is it?
It was the Wachowski sisters' attempt at, you know, this heady sci-fi, and it was absolute shit.
It is truly unbelievable just how bad this is. And when you do, I think this topic kind of really shows up the kind of performances that Eddie Redmayne put in The Theory of Everything,
yeah,
in comparison to what he did here.
Yeah.
Now, when you think of Eddie Redmayne, you do think of this phenomenal actor. You know, we've seen him in so many, The Danish Girl, for example.
Yeah.
We've seen him in even Les Mis, Bruce Rupp, he played Marius in that. He was phenomenal in that.
Yep.
Some fantastic, powerful, emotional performances. And then he does this.
Yeah.
And I don't know what his agent was thinking.
No, me neither. And it was really a repeat of the Eddie Murphy situation, because at the time there were a lot of people saying he's done a Norbit.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a saying. He's done a Norbit.
He's done a Norbit. He's dropped a Norbit.
I'm going to try and use that when I'm at family meals and like, Dad, you do realise you've just dropped a Norbit right now.
You've dropped a steaming Norbit. But luckily, I think for him, I think Jupiter Ascending came out sort of as voting was already underway, so it wasn't going to negatively affect his Oscar chances, luckily.
And of course, the other thing that kind of went in his favour is no one saw it.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, yeah.
No one actually went to see it.
No, because it was shit.
It's won some Skippies, though.
That's true. That's all it won.
You know, that's all it's ever going to win. It's weird when you say the Wachowski sisters. I'm not used to that yet.
It's because the other one has now come out as transgender, hasn't she?
Since we've recorded, I think, when we did them last, they were one boy, one girl, wasn't it?
I think when we started the podcast, they were the Wachowski brothers, and then they were the Wachowski siblings, and now they're the Wachowski sisters.
Where does it go from here? Back to brothers?
I don't think that's how transgender issues work.
I hope they found alignment with their gender now. I hope they're happy.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the message Skip then need to send him. Mark.
Correct.
Perfect. So is that yours? Counts as yours as well?
That's mine as well.
Well, I'm going to go with, in 1994, Matthew McConaughey was in Dazed and Confused, which I think is a really good, fun film.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that was a shit one. I was about to agree.
I really like that film, and he plays Wooderson, and for me, it was a really good stoner, silly, when sort of Clueless and Clerks and all these sort of stoner films were coming out. I love that film. I think it's great, and obviously Ben Affleck's in it as an utter arsehole.
Yeah.
Yeah, which he plays brilliantly. But then only a year later, Texas Chainsaw, The Next Generation. Because it's a horror and I'm a massive fan of the original, I will always watch these remakes. I'll always watch the Rob Zombie remakes of Halloween. So I'm intrigued and I have to see them. This was absolutely abysmal. What was he doing? I mean, luckily he's bounced back now and we've had the great films from him in the most recent years and he really is on top of form. But I was starting to think in Days Confused, this guy's going to be decent. This guy's got a career.
And all, I know right, all right, all right, all right.
That's a really... Damn, that's my... that's coming up in the game later. That's gone already.
I already won.
Yeah. But I think I really did have a lot of faith in him. I really like him. Like, hey, watch The Lever. I really like him in that film. And I thought, this guy's going to go on to a lot. He didn't. And then did loads of chick flicks that were utter shit
with Kate Hudson, I think. All of them.
A lot. Yeah. And I think Jennifer Lopez was in a couple as well. But then we got some good films now, so he's pulled it back.
I was going to say, I like how he went, I thought he was going to go and have a good future, and then he didn't. He won an Oscar.
Now he's on.
I mean, admittedly, it was 20 odd years later.
Yeah.
But
it took the reconnaissance to get him where he needed to be.
But Texas Chainsaw, The Next Generation is abysmal. He's dreadful in it, and I just can't believe it's the same guy on film. It's don't go and do it just out of curiosity. So, don't watch it.
It's kind of similar to when he returned on our screens in Mud and things like that. And people went, I can't believe this is the same Matthew McConaughey we've been seeing for the last 20 years.
Yeah. So he might go shit again.
He could do.
It's like Interstellar. That was the beginning of the end. He was fine in that. He was not the problem.
I was going to say, he wasn't the issue with Interstellar.
No.
I think my favourite thing about that choice there is when you said Dazed and Confused, Ben's, Ben's head started going, what's the good one?
Yeah, exactly. I think I made you watch that when we started this podcast and you came back and was like, did you enjoy it? Nope. I was like, oh yeah.
It's rubbish.
You had to be there. It's the time.
You had to be there.
What, when it was being filmed?
On set.
If you weren't on set, you won't get it.
Yeah. Sorry, dude. You've got to have the right contacts.
Oh, Christ.
Come on then, Ben. Second choice.
I'm going to go for a director this time. So, in April of 2005, Robert Rodriguez released Sin City. Mm-hmm. In June of 2005, just 2 months later, he released The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lavagirl in 3D.
I'm assuming he literally wrapped up production and released it in April.
Yeah.
And then started filming, wrapped up production and released
it in
June.
Did post-production, all of that. The film looks like it took about 2 months tops because it's absolute shit. I must admit, I've never watched the whole film. I've seen trailers, I've seen clips, I've read reviews. It's notorious for being one of the worst pieces of shit that's ever been released. I think on IMDb it has something like a 3. And then when you compare that to Sin City, now let's not get our minds bogged down with how shit Sin City 2 was. The first one was great. It was revolutionary. It didn't look like anything else.
No, and it was phenomenal.
It was a great film in its own right. And, you know, Rodriguez already had, you know, a career before that. You know, he'd done things like Desperado and so on. People knew his worth, but I think this is what put him over mm-hmm. the top. And then literally 2 months later, he shat on his own glory with The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava
Girl. He dropped an orbit.
He did drop a steaming orbit.
In the truest of form. The thing is, I can't really talk about this. So I've never watched that film that you're talking about. You didn't even watch it all.
No.
I don't think many people have. No. To be honest with you.
The thing is, it was a kid's film. It's not as if it was made for adults and it was shit. It was a kid's film. But to make a good kid's film, it's a low bar, man. Mm. Kids are easily pleased and easily amused. And if you can't even do that with like a person who's part shark and then flashing lights, what can you do?
I hope he got well paid for this.
Oh, I imagine he did.
It kind of destroyed a lot of his career afterwards, I imagine.
Well, I don't know. He's still out there making shit.
Oh, maybe it wasn't.
He's still dropping Norbits now and then. You know, he's all
right. Maybe Sin City was the prime then. That was his peak.
I think it was. That and From Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah.
They were his peaks.
I didn't like that one he did with Grindhouse very much.
No one really likes Grindhouse. It's a bit of fun, but it wasn't a good film, or two films, however you want to view it.
Oh, yeah, it was Death Proof and
ugh, so bad.
Yeah. Let's not get into that. That's a topic for another day. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with my second choice. Then it's going to be Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm. Now, your hero, your god.
I love the man. Yeah. Absolutely love the man. In 1997, he played Dr. Sean Maguire in Good Will Hunting.
Yep.
I think we'll all agree one of the most powerful performances he ever put forward in a dramatic form. That same year, he released Flubber. Now, okay. They are quite similar. Yeah, there are some similarities here. But it's just one of those overly comical, ridiculous Robin Williams performances. Yeah. You know, like what he kind of got known for. He was funny originally. Mm-hmm. He did a lot of funny things. And then eventually it just became quite tiresome.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the peak of that for me. And I think this is one of the reasons why he then moved into dramatic acting a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just kind of sums up the whole of his career in that respect. He can do it, mm-hmm. but sometimes he clearly got a call from his agent who said, do this film, they're paying a lot.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Have you two seen Flubber?
Of course, yeah.
Years ago.
A perennial Christmas TV film, isn't it? It's always on Flubber.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
the special effects of the actual Flubber ball thing as well, mm-hmm. just awful, and he is overly comical, and it's not necessary.
No, and you know, to keep invoking Eddie Murphy, he and Eddie Murphy had a similar trajectory in that they were both known for silly comedy roles. So Williams had things like Flubber, and Murphy had things like The Clumps,
yep.
You know, Nutty Professor. And whereas Williams tried purposefully to move into more dramatic work and had great success doing so, Eddie Murphy, with the exception of Dreamgirls, doubled down on the stupid, yeah. shitty comedies and has just done a succession of them ever since, which is why, you think when this guy was the biggest stand-up of the 80s,
yeah.
this guy would sell out arenas. People, you know...
Before comedy acts were known to be
exactly right, arenas. Exactly right. And young up-and-coming comics, not just black comics, there's black and white comics, all hold Eddie Murphy as this icon. And what and people don't think of him as that now.
No.
They think of him from the guy from Meet Dave.
Oh, God.
If you're known for all those years' work, all those stand-ups, those classic films, and then, yeah, you're from Meet Dave.
If you were the pioneer with like Eddie Murphy Raw.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the greatest comedy shows of all time.
And Delirious as well. Amazing.
Delirious, yeah. And then all your career, on your tombstone, it's going to say, Meet Dave, Shag Mel B.
Meet Dave, Shag Mel B, dropped an orbit at the end.
Tragic. Absolutely tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. My final one is one of my favourite actors, Paul Giamatti.
Yeah.
Now, one of his greatest films that, fair play, got a lot of recognition was Sideways in January of 2005, where he plays Miles. Great story, really good acting, with actually the guy that played Sandman, who's a very famous yeah. member of this podcast.
Well, our long-time listeners will know that Mark has a great love for Thomas Hayden Church's role of Sandman. So when you said Paul Giamatti, I thought your good role was going to be him as Rhino.
So did I.
In Amazing Spider-Man 2.
But Sideways is a stunning story, and I really enjoy it. And it's one of those films I'll watch easily every year, get some wine and just sit there, and it's great. It's a really, really good film that if you tried to tell it to someone, what it's about these two guys, one's about to get married, they go around, they just get drunk, and you see one of them have a bit of a midlife. It doesn't sound that great, mm-hmm. but it's a stunning, stunning piece of work, and Paul Giamatti's amazing in it. But in the same year, he brought out a film called, get ready, Paycheck. Now, have any of you seen Paycheck?
That's ironic, because that is exactly why he did it.
He plays the role of Shorty alongside Ben Affleck, yeah. Uma Thurman, mm-hmm. some really good people in this film. But it says on the poster why they're all in this, yeah. Paycheck. Yeah. It's one of the shoddiest, worst pieces of shit I've ever seen. And I'm trying to swear less on these podcasts. If you go back over the last 10 episodes, I think we're doing really well.
Yeah, we can say shit.
It's difficult.
Shit's fine.
Yeah. He is utterly shit in this film. Yeah. And it's, again, he's just gone for... Oh, I'll do that. I'll have a bit of money. Shocking. It makes his rhino appearance, which is only 6 minutes long, Oscar worthy.
Is it six?
Shoddy. Shouldn't have happened. And it did tarnish it for me, knowing that it was the same 12 months as Sideways.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah, Paycheck is an absolutely shit film. It wasn't it like it's like a really crappy sci-fi or something, isn't it? Doesn't he have his like his
I
mind
kind of
wiped
forgot
or
it.
Something?
Do you think it had like a different name originally, and then they went round to the cast and just said, "We need to change the title of this. We need a bit of word association with you. Why are you doing this film, Paycheck?"
Yeah.
On that tack, I read something this past week which I thought was brilliant. You know, in recent months and recent years, there's been a big push for the fact that women in film aren't getting paid mm-hmm. as much as their male counterparts. Now, there's a film that's just come out or about to come out called The Huntsman Winter's War, which co-stars Charlize Theron along with Chris Hemsworth. Mm-hmm. And apparently, when she was signing up for this role, this is when the whole furore over women being underpaid came out. So she pushed and forced through that she would get paid the same as Chris Hemsworth. So, you know, absolutely right. So she should.
Yeah.
But I've now been reading that in the film, Chris Hemsworth is in every scene. She's in three scenes for like a total of 10 minutes. But she managed to force through equal pay. Good on her. Good on her.
We said this, I think we've had a conversation about this before, and it's like, you know, there are agents out there who will do this.
Yeah.
There are agents out there who will negotiate, and they will fight tooth and nail to get you paid
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to be paid.
Yeah, yeah.
So
we've got to be very grateful that those trade negotiations happen on a regular
exactly,
basis.
You know. In fact, brings me to my next topic, trade negotiations.
It's top three, yeah.
But yeah, it is one of those things where if you've got a good agent, they'll get you paid whatever
they will.
You want.
Yeah, yeah. I'm right. Is it me?
That's the last one
is
for
my
you,
last
mate?
One. Now, this one I'm kind of on the fence about. The one that I'm using as a good film is not a film that I think is good, but people generally do.
Is it Forrest Gump?
It's certainly not. So I'm going with Hugh Jackman. So in December 2012, they released Les Miserables, which mm-hmm. I think is garbage because it's a musical. But he was nominated for an Oscar for it. So that's his high watermark in terms yeah. of, you know, prestige. It's obviously, it's no Wolverine or, you know.
Well, X-Men Origins.
Yeah, not so much. But, you know, in terms of his career and his awards chatter and whatnot, yeah. this is his high watermark. 1 month later, he released Movie 43.
Ugh.
Which I think you've discussed before, Adam, as one of the worst films
it
of
is,
all time.
It's definitely one of the worst films of all time. I think yeah. I think we did a topic on like the worst films we've ever seen, mm-hmm. the top three, and that made it into mine, I believe,
yeah.
If I remember correctly, because it is, hands down, one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's just, for people who haven't seen it, it's just a loosely connected series of sketches featuring an inexplicable amount of A-list talent. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they got roped into it.
Paycheck.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
It's, they say it's the unofficial Paycheck sequel.
Yeah.
But it's absolute shit. So to go from being nominated for an Oscar to doing that. such garbage. And I think that's another one that's on IMDb at sort of two out of ten.
I don't believe he didn't win that year, did he?
No, he didn't.
Dropped an orbit.
He dropped an orbit.
He most definitely dropped an orbit. So I'm a bit on the fence kind of about my last one as well, because while I think the film is bad, I don't think he's necessarily the worst thing about it.
Okay.
So in the same year, Jeff Bridges released True Grit, mm-hmm. he released Tron Legacy.
Mm.
See, I like it in both. I think he's pretty good.
And I must admit, it's kind of a guilty pleasure that I like Tron Legacy.
I know
generally the world doesn't, so I don't disagree with
it's
your pick.
It's a terrible film.
I quite like it.
I like it as well.
It's good.
You are two
the
of the worst
brilliant.
People. Yeah, but you can't like a film based on a soundtrack by Daft Punk.
Yeah, I just don't know. It's just
it's easy to watch. What you're essentially telling me there is the film's easy to watch, and I really like that Daft Punk album.
I usually read a book while I'm watching that film, you know.
But it is one of the worst films of the recent generation, especially the CGI. I mean, when they rebuilt his face to make him look younger.
Yeah, not good.
Whereas him as Rooster Cogburn and Drew Grit, as we've discussed mm-hmm. on many occasions, mm-hmm. Absolutely brilliant. Just such a great performance. Oscar-nominated performance, I believe, as well.
Yeah.
And then to go into Tron Legacy after 20-odd years and since the first, he's not the worst thing in it. He's not the worst thing about it. But it's such a terrible film, and it is a mixed bag.
I wouldn't go, as I say, I quite like it. It's a guilty pleasure for me, but it is not even in the same league as
True Grit.
Scary how close those films were brought out. Jesus.
You know, what? As we rightly say, True Grit is a film, and Tron Legacy was a 2-hour advert for the new Daft Punk album.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed. But,
I believe they actually went on tour that year, Daft Punk, doing a lot of festivals in sort of France and places like that. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's what it was. It was just a promotional tour
maybe
for
so.
Them.
Maybe so.
Cool. Do you want to hear what the guy said on social media? There's quite a few come through. We've got at OB Cole Kenobi, Adam Sandler in 2002. So he released the god-awful Mr. Deed, but then did bounce back with Punch Drunk Love.
Okay.
This is a real funny one. At Percy Phone, Sandra Bullock. She did The Blind Side and All About Steve and was on record, won an Oscar and a Razzie in the same year.
Yeah.
That is insane. Mm-hmm. Philip Rogers, John Travolta, look who's talking now, but then bounced back with just a small little one, Pulp Fiction in 94. That's pretty good going.
It's not a bad film to bounce back with, is it?
No, not so much.
Louis Carney, Morgan Freeman in Gone Baby Gone, but then did Even Almighty the same year.
He's talk about paycheck movies. The amount of shit movies he does for the cash now, Morgan Freeman.
And narrates. Just narrates them. All he does is just his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Most recently, Samir Alam has pointed out Michael B. Jordan for Fantastic Four and Creed.
See, I thought Adam was going to have that.
You see,
I had you pegged to pick that one.
Yeah, again, that's kind of one of those ones where I don't think he's the worst thing in it. He's not the worst thing about that film at all.
No, absolutely not.
I nearly picked Miles Teller for Whiplash and Fantastic Four, but it was about 4 months, and I thought these guys aren't going to let me off with that.
No, it's not your mixed bag for a year and a half.
Popcorn Heart has put Jim Carrey for Dumb and Dumber, but then did Batman Forever. Ugh. Chris Pratt for The Lego Movie, but then did Movie 43.
Ugh. How many of the cast of Movie 43 could have been in this?
Oh,
I imagine most of them.
Probably most of them, actually.
And actually, down to the release, not the film, but when they came out, Drew Barrymore for Donnie Darko, but then did Freddy Got Fingered.
Oh, God.
Amazing.
We've got Kung Fu Drive-In Podcast has put, please bump this up to decades just so I can say John Travolta and then just walk away.
I like that.
Fran Elizabeth has put Natalie Portman, 2 for her, Black Swan, and then Your Highness.
Yeah. Oh, Christ.
But you could swap it and put Thor and then No Strings Attached.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Jesus. Wow. Is she like the poster child for mixed bag of a year?
Isn't it? Wasn't that No Strings Attached when there were two films about Friends with Benefits that came out?
Yeah,
like
it was.
The other one was Saw Friends with Benefits, which is actually quite a good film, but No Strings Attached was shit.
And wasn't Mila Kunis in one of them and Natalie Portman, which is obviously the opposite from Black Swan?
Yeah, Mila Kunis is in Friends with Benefits, which is a good film.
And in the other one, No Strings Attached, isn't it? Who's the guy in it? It's not Mila's husband now, is it?
That would be weird. Ashton Kutcher.
It could be. That would be really weird.
It's Kutcher, yeah.
It's really weird. And Ben Buckingham, Arnie, for Jingle All the Way, good.
Yeah.
But then Batman and Robin.
Massive. Great show.
There's some real, real diverse randomness there. But I think for me, when I've heard you say Eddie Redmayne, that's the most shocking one. Mm-hmm. That is the biggest drop ever.
It's just such an odd one, isn't it?
It's horrible. What's he doing? He's sitting there with his Oscar, looking at home, thinking, all my life I've gone to school, I've studied, and then he watches back Jupiter Ascending.
But then he comes back with the Danish girl, so clearly he's just going, fuck you, I can do what I like.
What next? That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Jupiter Ascending 2.
Wow. Is he just going to go constantly like, Oscar-nominated performance, shit.
Yeah.
Oscar-nominated performance, shit.
There was one more I was just going to get in there that I really wanted to put, but it was out by 2 months. This is funny. Robert Downey Jr. did Zodiac, which we all bloody love. Yeah. Do you know what he did 1 year and 2 months before?
No.
Dr. Kozak in The Shaggy Dog Story with Tim Allen.
I've seen that film and it's very good. So yeah, give it a chance.
Right, next topic time.
So it's me, isn't it?
It is.
So this topic was great, but it took a lot of thought and a lot of research. So I want to go the exact opposite to that. I want to do something where it'll be a bit of fun and we will have obvious answers in our head. It will take no thought whatsoever. Next time we're coming back with our top three aliens in film.
Oh, I love so it.
We've just been to our local View cinema to see Captain America Civil War, the third film in the Captain America franchise and the 645th film in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. If you don't know the plot line by now, you've clearly been living under a rock. Essentially, there is a fracturing in the Avengers that pits Team Cap, Captain America and his cronies, against Team Iron Man, Tony Stark and his friends. It's brought about by the destruction of Sokovia that occurred in the last Avengers film, Age of Ultron. And it's also brought about by a series of deaths that are caused by Scarlet Witch at the start of this film. That then leads to the fracturing of the team, and then there's also a villain on the loose as well, Zemo, who we'll discuss later on. Before I get into any more of the nitty-gritty, because we're going to do that anyway, I want instant thoughts, because we all had very high expectations. Adam, instant thoughts.
Just firstly, obviously, there's going to be a very spoiler-filled review.
Yeah. just a tad, yeah.
Very spoiler-filled. Yeah. I'm still a bit undecided.
Wow. Okay, leave it there for now, then we'll come back to that. Mark, instant thoughts?
Superb.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. Bloody loved it. Thought it was magnificent. Adam, more detail then.
I'm just very undecided about it. I think they try to accomplish a lot in one film, and it's difficult to process it all.
Yeah.
In the time that we've had to see it.
Yes, that's true. Normally, we will go and see a film. We will then give it a couple of days before we record our review, so we've had time to filter it through our brains. We've not done that. We've literally just got back from the cinema. So we've not had time to give it real thought.
I don't think it's even necessarily just that. I think there is a lot going on in this film, and there is a lot to be done, and there is a lot to take in. It's a very ambitious project, and the Russo brothers have done a great job with what they've put on screen. And I'm not, you know, this isn't a bad review, or this is nothing like that, because, you know, it's a great film, it's very enjoyable, but there is a lot going on.
Yeah. The one thing I'd say is it's a 2.5-hour film, and for me, it didn't feel anywhere near that. It felt probably an hour and a half. I couldn't believe it. I looked at my watch at one point and I was like, there's only half an hour left? This is insane. It flew by because it was a lot of action. When I went to see Batman versus Superman, it felt like nearly 3-hour film. So I don't want to compare it too much to that film, because a lot of people are, you know, a big battle between two people and blah, blah, blah. But for me, this just flew by and a lot happened, but I loved it.
The longest part of the film for me was sitting there waiting for the post-credit scene. That was interminable. We were sat there seemingly forever to get to the post-credit scene, but we'll come to it in a minute. Let's start at the start then. So the film opens with our heroes in Nigeria, and they're hunting Crossbones, who is blowing shit up, essentially. And then in defeating him, Scarlet Witch manages to blow up the side of a building in Nigeria, which kills a load of Nigerians and a load of visiting Wakandans. Wakanda, for those in the know, the home country of the Black Panther. That then brings in the attention of the US government, who decide to bring in something called the Sokovia Accords that says that the superheroes should be overseen by the UN, effectively. And that's when the fracturing begins, because you've got one team saying, no, we're not up for that, and the other team saying, yes, this is what we should do. Let's talk about motivations for a minute. Did it make sense to you guys that Tony Stark, Iron Man, would be all for it and Captain America would be dead against it?
I think Stark's been progressively... Iron Man as a superhero has been progressively known as the government agent for a lot longer. Mm-hmm. He's been in bed with governments for years, arms dealing, things like that. So it does make sense that he'd be the one that before keeping themselves in check. And Cap is all about freedom of movement, freedom of... no restrictions. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy who kind of fought for that. So I think that it does make sense to have the money only on those sort of sides.
Because mm-hmm. I think that was my worry going into it, that it might be a bit forced. Because they had to make it so essentially half the good guys were for it and half were against it. But it actually seemed quite natural. I understood everyone's motivations. Mm-hmm.
Massively, and the one thing that I had a disadvantage is I've not read the graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
I remember you got it for Secret Santa recently, but you'd read it before,
yeah.
But you two are massive fans of this, so I'm sure you two are watching it going, this bit's a bit different, or, oh, I see how they've done that. And I was just there just enjoying the story, which is quite refreshing.
Yeah.
So sitting in the cinema today, and we'll talk about the twists towards the end and why they fall out again and stuff, but I was loving the fact of learning this story as I'm mm-hmm. going along, so it was really enjoyable, which most people in the cinema today I think hadn't read the graphic novel. They're just Marvel fans that just want to see this film.
It's not actually particularly true to the graphic novel, other than the base idea of government control coming in and half of them liking it, half of them not. That's it, really.
You were never going to be able to put the graphic novel of Civil War on screen. There's a lot going on in this film. There's a lot too much that goes on in the comic sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Civil War story arc within the comic, you couldn't put that on screen. It would just be too difficult to navigate and narrate that. So I did like the film. You know, I am a big fan of this film. It was good. My biggest concern with it was it felt like it didn't accomplish anything.
Okay. So you felt like at the end of the film, nothing had really changed from the status quo at the start of the film?
Not particularly.
Mm.
I mean, do you guys feel differently to that? Aside from the introduction of Black Panther and Spider-Man.
Which we'll come to. It felt kind of like a hanging thread at the end of the film, in that everyone is still free. Even Iron Man kind of sees where Captain America's coming from. And Captain America says, you know, I know we're kind of on the run, but we'll be there for you if you need us. Which, of course, they will when Thanos comes a knocking. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit sort of dangling, ready for the next one. As is always the case with these Marvel films, they're always just setting up, volleying up the next one, aren't they?
I'll tell you that's the case recently. I wouldn't say it before. I mean, even things like Cap 2, Winter Soldier didn't really do that. It wasn't like a setup for Ultron. It was literally a standalone film.
Yeah.
It worked off its own back. So it just feels like this was... Ultron, we all kind of slated Ultron at the time.
Yeah, we didn't love it.
For being a nothing film that served no purpose whatsoever. And I just feel that this was a bit similar in that respect. All it was an introduction to these two new superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a story with it contained within itself, which is great, you know. I've not got an issue with that if you're containing the story, because Ant-Man did that.
Yeah.
But on the base, on the whole of things, it felt like it didn't really progress
enough.
At all. I mean, we had no real, obviously Thanos being the next big Avengers film, next big Avengers villain.
Yeah.
We had no progression into this part of the story.
Yeah. Because I thought in one of the post-credits scenes we would see Thanos or maybe even the Guardians of the Galaxy poking their heads in, you know, but we didn't get any of that. You've mentioned there the introduction of the two new characters, Black Panther and Spider-Man. Mark, tell me about them. What were your thoughts on those two?
Again, I don't know anything about their backstory. So to see Black Panther and obviously his dad dying, so that's his reason to be angry and want revenge. Yeah. I thought the actor was fantastic. I love the character.
Chadwick Boseman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I think the suit looked fantastic.
It does.
I love the
does.
Claws. And I was sold on him, and I'm already excited to see more of him in the next films and his own film.
I thought he was great. I wasn't massively sold on the claws, because the first time he did it, I was like, oh, it's Catwoman. It was a bit too feminine for me. And then every time he appeared on screen, there'd be a close-up of his hands and a little, chick, and a little claws coming out. It's like, we get it. That's what he does every time.
It's kind of all he's got, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I liked him. I thought he was cool. Chadwick Boseman was great. We've spoken about him before on the podcast and how much of a fantastic actor he is. So it was great to finally see him in this role.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did the character justice as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he really did. Very interested to see Black Panther as a film now as well. And I guess case in point there, it just feels like it was an advert for that.
Yeah, but a good one.
Yeah,
it was a damn good trailer.
It's left
for
me wanting
future.
More.
Yeah, yeah. And what about Spider-Man? Tell me about Tom Holland as Peter Parker.
Well, I'm curious more to get your opinion on this, because you've always been a bit down on Spider-Man.
It's a fair point. I have. I am no fan of the Spider-Man character, really. I've never been a big fan of Spider-Man comic books. I can't abide the Spider-Man representations on film. Andrew Garfield, I thought, was nothing. I thought Tobey Maguire was okay in the first couple, but then turned emo. This, to me, was the best representation of Spider-Man I've seen on screen. A younger version, a high school student. Tom Holland, I thought, had that sort of charm and the, you know, a bit of nervousness and a bit of wittiness about him. His interplay with Tony Stark, I thought, was really funny. He was great as when he was actually in costume web-slinging. I thought he was cool as hell. And I'm genuinely excited to see where the MCU takes him.
Yeah. I'm in agreement with that as well. I thought he was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I was unsold on it myself at the start. I was like, I'm not really sure how this is going to go, how this is going to work. But our introduction to him was great.
Yeah.
The moment, obviously, the bit with Stark was fantastic. There's a wonderful bit where he just makes that reference to Empire Strikes Back. Hey, yeah. Have you guys ever seen that really old movie, Empire Strikes Back? And everyone's just like, oh, God, how young is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, I loved him. I didn't think we were going to get as much as we did of him. I just thought we'd get a few little bits leading on to of coming soon his own film. But we got quite a lot of screen time. And like you said, his chemistry with the other actors, who are all established actors that have been going and built these characters, he fitted in instantly like he'd always been around.
Yeah. And this is something that Marvel deserves a lot of credit for. Every time they introduce a new actor, it seems like they've got instant chemistry with all the actors there. Yeah. Their casting is always on point.
It really is. It was the same with Paul Rudd.
I was just about to say today, when he first mixes with Robert Downey Jr., you're like, okay, this is too natural. This is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just mixing and gelling perfectly. Yeah.
They're so good at that. Speaking of Paul Rudd as Ant-Man, I think probably my favourite moment in the film, there's a big sort of battle scene between the two sides of the Avengers, all taking each other on. And when Ant-Man turns into Giant Man, I was like, yeah, I genuinely wanted to go, yes!
So did I.
So cool. And then the bit you mentioned with Spider-Man, the reason why he referenced Empire Strikes Back is because he used his web to go around Giant Man's feet, like, was it the AT-AT walk, as it happens to bring him crashing to the ground. That was a great moment.
But I thought that the whole interactions were brilliant. All the fight scenes were fantastic. It had that kind of seriousness with that underlying element of, these are friends fighting each other at this point. So a lot of the time they're kind of pulling their punches and then regretting it because they're getting hit back.
Because Scarlet Witch says that exact thing to Hawkeye, because he obviously didn't want to hurt Black Widow. Yeah.
But there's a great moment there where I think Paul Rudd first turns into Giant Man and Scott Lang goes into Giant Man.
Mm.
And Rhodey just says, okay, the tiny guy's big now.
What I really liked about that scene was, I don't know about you guys, but I didn't know that was coming. So no, I didn't know no, that was no, going to happen. Either. And it's so good that we didn't get that in the trailer. We've not had it in magazines or all over the internet. So it was just nice and refreshing to actually be like, oh, I haven't seen this before. I didn't realise he could go that big.
Yeah.
But what Adam was just saying then about the fights, I think the choreography for these films were the best I've seen. And what I really enjoyed about the fights in this film, and I don't think DC did it well with Batman, is I could see what was going on.
Mm.
Each kick, each punch, yes, it was intense. It was fast. It reminded me a bit of Casino Royale, the intro. It was all full on, but I could see every punch connecting and I felt like it was real. Mm. In the Batman battle with Superman, I didn't know what the hell was going on. Like you said, it was like a video game. Mm. This was more of a real representation of what an actual fight would be like between humans and these people.
I tend to agree with you, except for one scene. There's a scene where they first go to, I think it's Romania, to find Bucky, the Winter Soldier, and then he and Cap end up fighting a load of police in a stairwell. And that, to me, because of the close proximity of the cameras and the walls and the people, that was hard to decipher who was doing what where. And I think the only reason why that scene particularly bothered me is because in season two of Daredevil, there's a stairwell fight that is amazing and one of the best choreographed fights I've ever seen. And
this, I think,
in Cap didn't live up to it.
Yeah,
but otherwise, I agree about the fight scene. The opening fight scene in Nigeria, I thought was absolutely brilliant with Cap and Black Widow fighting Crossbones's, you know, his people out in the streets.
Yeah,
my favourite thing was Black Widow's new moveset. Because she's been down a wrestling gym or something, because she was doing Hurricanranas, DDTs. She had some sick moves.
She definitely pulled out a couple of spears at the start as well. Yeah. Better than Roman Reigns.
I agree with you on all the points you've made there. The choreography was spot on. And Daredevil is very, very well known for its choreography and its fight scenes. I mean, the first season, there's the fight in the kind of corridor, which is just absolutely spot on. Every single fight scene in Daredevil. Marvel have clearly taken that and gone, right, how can we put this into the film universe as well?
Yeah.
The action was very, very easy to follow for the most part. You drew parallels between sort of Batman, Superman and Cap. Iron Man's fighting and the kind of motivations for that. A lot of people have been talking that. A few people have been drawing parallels between the two and obviously slamming DC and praising Marvel. And they're right to do so, because the point about this film is it's two characters fighting we care about.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect, yeah.
These are two characters that had their own films. They've established. We've seen their personalities. We've seen them as friends.
Yeah.
And now they're fighting. DC rushed it. They went too big with Batman, Superman early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As much as we enjoyed the film, we criticised it a bit, but not a lot.
Yeah.
It was too early in the whole universe in its infancy. for that. Whereas this is Marvel have established everything. They've given everyone a background, given everyone a backstory, and it just means more on screen.
It does. It absolutely does. And we discussed this before. You know, I think you said it, Adam, that DC are trying too hard to catch up with Marvel by jumping too far ahead. We haven't built the love for these characters. And I think the thing that hit that home for me the most was I thought Robert Downey Jr. was the best he's ever been in this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You really felt how this was tearing him apart, the fact that he was having to succumb to government control because he knew it was the best thing to do, even though it was going to tear his team apart and he'd hurt his friends. And Downey Jr. is a brilliant actor anyway, but it was all the more moving and affecting because we've seen him from Iron Man 1 when he was just sort of a playboy who didn't really give a shit, all the way to this point where he's, you know, you feel like he's on the verge of a heart attack because it's killing him inside. I thought it was a magnificent performance, and it only matters because we've seen so much of him in the previous films. Whereas, you know, whatever Batman and Superman feel in Batman versus Superman, we don't have that innate love for them, that backstory.
And Downey Jr. is a great point to make there because there's a scene very early on where they're originally talking about this Sokovia Accord.
Mm.
And he brings up a picture on his phone of a woman he's met, son.
Mm.
Who was a graduate at college, was going to go on to do great things, decided to go travelling before he did, ended up in Sarkovia because he wanted to help people and ended up dying.
Yeah.
And you could see how much it's tore him apart. He's been quiet this entire... Because he had some really big development over the last few films. He's really moved from, like you say, the playboy character to the guy who became a bit more self-assured in his own skin, back to this kind of just crumpled mess again.
Yeah.
Because you can see how much it's tearing him apart.
Yeah, and that thing with, you know, that kid dying, that was kind of a microcosm, and then the macrocosm of the same story, effectively, was Zemo. Zemo, the bad guy in this film, his motivation, it's not that he's some Hydra agent who wants to see the Avengers fail, it's that his family died in Sokovia, and he just wants to see the Avengers tear each other apart. So do you think that worked?
Yeah, I'm just trying to get my head around it all. Yeah, it did work big time. And I think I really picked up on your point then that Iron Man was only suited up for about 20 minutes of this film.
Mm, yeah.
He was literally, when we first saw him as a much younger, I think that was done really well.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
like Tron.
Exactly like Tron.
Yeah.
And it really worked. And it's really made me open my eyes up to, actually, Robert Downey Jr. has really given his shit again.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really given his heart and soul to these performances. And it was really refreshing. And I like the fact now that we hopefully will get to see more of him in an Iron Man 4. Because... Mm. He's really becoming a character I really care about, big time.
My only concern with an Iron Man 4 is the amount, the villains from the last two have just been so weak that where do they go now?
Well, this is my thing. This is why I've come on to Zemo, because at the end of the film, he could have easily have just been, you know, there's a bit where Black Panther catches him and then that could have been the end of it. But you see him locked away with Martin Freeman, who inexplicably is in this film.
And I think,
are they actually developing the character of Baron Zemo? Is this going to turn him more evil? Is he then going to become a bigger villain like Baron Zemo
is
in the books?
I'm hoping so.
Because maybe he's then going to be...
one of the ones after Thanos or something like that, or maybe an integral part to Thanos' plan.
Yeah,
I agree. I want to bring up a quick point with you guys now, because I've praised the Russo brothers here for how well they told this story. Plot holes were non-existent in this film.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not saying I've seen any, but I'm saying we've only just walked out the cinema.
I know, but I was thinking about, like, because my original thought was, how does Baron Zemo know that, obviously, Winter Soldier is Bucky Barnes or that, end of Cap 2, Black Widow dumps everything on the internet for everyone to see.
That's true, yeah. And he says, I had the patience to decrypt it and all that, yeah.
So it's just fantastic how they've literally taken a minor point that happened in Cap 2.
Mm.
And brought it as the main focal point for how this villain learnt everything and did everything.
Yeah.
I just think that's really good storytelling compared to a lot of other things you see.
It's true. And I think the team that made this film is the Marvel winning team. Mm-hmm. The Russo brothers directing and Marcus and McFeely writing, they are the guys that make the best Marvel films.
Agreed. 100%.
Because it's the same boys who did Cap 2, which we all love.
I love the seriousness as well. Like the opening scene when we find out that the accident is... for the parents to both die, was filmed like something like off Fargo or something. It looked really gritty and different, and it doesn't look like any sort of superhero film. And I didn't know, and you two must have known from the book and stuff, but I didn't know that it was Bucky that did this and caused this So when they did the reveal towards the end, and they were all back friends, and it was all like, you know, we're true, so everything's good.
Mm-hmm.
To then watch that video footage back and see how brutal he was with his parents, and his mother round the throat.
Yeah, Tony Stark's parents.
I was literally like, this is going to kick off so... Did you guys know that was coming? Is this...
No.
It's some artistic license, I think, they've taken with that one, just to kind of drive
that was the story forward. Really awkward to watch in a way of, it's really going to kick off now.
And I'll tell you what, to make another comparison to Batman versus Superman, when Tony sees that Winter Soldier killed his parents, he kicks off and Cap's like, no, don't, he was under Hydra control, it's not him. And Tony just goes, but he killed my mum.
Yeah.
And that got me, that hit me. And then I thought about Batman versus Superman, the whole our mums are both named Martha, which was laughable. And again, it's all down to development and building the world. I cared about Tony in the fact that his parents died. I didn't give a shit that Batman and Superman's mums were both named Martha, so they had to be busy mates for life. Because it was all down to the world building, and there was none in Batman versus Superman, comparatively. You know,
and that's the problem DC have in comparison to Marvel.
Can I ask you one question that's been on my mind, and I'm going to look a bit of a dick if there's an obvious reason, but where was Thor?
Well, in this film? They kind of make a throwaway comment at the start about Thor and Hulk both kind of gone, and he says, if I had misplaced two megaton nukes, there'd be hell to pay.
Well, Hulk, we know, has flown off on a ship. Yeah. He's sort of finding himself. And Thor, I believe, went off into space to sort of hunt down...
He went back to Asgard, presumably.
No, I'm sure that there's a line in Age of Ultron where it says he's off to go look for something, or, you know, he's going to look into more of the Infinity Stones, I think he's off doing.
Yeah, he went up looking for answers after, because obviously he had the vision of Ragnarok Age of Ultron.
So he's gone off to do that. But I think it actually worked out brilliantly for them two not being in the film, because based on their personality types, I think they would both have to be Team Cap.
Yeah,
because the Hulk is the Hulk. He can't be controlled, so there's no point trying to put him under a government program. And Thor is the god king of a mystical, magical race, as if he's going to let NATO and UN tell him what to do.
Good point.
So because they would both have to be Team Cap, the team would be far too weighted on their side. It would be they've managed to do it quite well, so it's half and half.
Because who on Team Iron Man's going to go up against Hulk and Thor?
Yeah, exactly. So that writing them out of this was smart, was very, very
quite
smart
brave,
business.
But it worked.
And I love those two, but I didn't really miss them. I thought there was so much enough going on in this that it didn't feel like, oh shit, I wish Thor was here.
I suppose the impact when they come back is going to be like, oh yes.
And that's the other thing now, because everyone's going to want to know Thor Ragnarok is the next big Thor film coming in. So we're all going to be very curious to see if he hears about what's kind of happened and how that kind of plays into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing, I'm just going back to the idea of motivations. Because I've read the book and I know sort of the sides that were taken in the book, and I knew that it was essentially the same thing in the film, I always expected to be fully Team Cap, because I believe in what he believes rather than Iron Man. But I think the film did a very smart thing, that they had Cap repeatedly protecting Bucky, despite the fact that Bucky was a mass murderer. And you're thinking, stop protecting your mate. There's a point where you've got to realise, I know he's my friend, but he's also killed a hell of a lot of people. So I found myself questioning Cap and thinking maybe Tony is right, which I think the film did really well. I didn't expect at any point to be on Tony's side.
Yeah, you couldn't really put a black and white area in it, because it was two of your heroes, two of the guys that the fans are supposed to get behind. So putting in that sort of morally grey area between the two of them, because you can completely understand Stark's reasoning behind everything anyway.
Yeah.
The fact that they caused so much destruction and had free reign and gone and begged, because we've seen in Sokovia, even though it wasn't their fault, it's someone who's trying to get revenge on them, and it's the same here.
Yeah. I think the Vision makes a point, doesn't he, about how, you know, there's been a lot more disasters and catastrophes since they've been around, because that's what heroes breed. Heroes breed villains.
He says, our strength breeds challenge, challenge breeds conflict, and conflict breeds catastrophe.
Exactly right,
And he was absolutely right. It's that question of, it's a question of escalation that Nolan brought up in the Batman Dark Knight trilogy. There's a scene at the end of, I think, Batman Begins, where Gordon says to Batman, what about escalation? And that's exactly what happens here, you know.
Yeah.
You have one super being, you get two.
Yeah.
And two, you get four. Four, you get eight.
And here's a question then, because we are going to get to Thanos eventually, and he is the biggest of the big bads in the Marvel Universe. They will inevitably overcome him in the Infinity War films. Where'd you go from there? Who's next? What do you do? Who do they then start taking on?
Well, this is the question, isn't it? Because they've had this plan in place for, well, probably nigh on, let's say, probably 10 years now, because Iron Man was 2008. So presumably they must have had a small plan in place prior to that, let's say around 2006, when they were filming Iron Man. So I assume they've got a plan for after.
Well, I'm kind of thinking they might not, because they've cancelled Inhumans, haven't they?
Yeah.
They've taken that off the slate, which I can understand, because Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. have ruined the Inhumans. Yeah. So I can understand why no one would actually want to see that film. But I think they might have be thinking, okay, we've got the biggie coming.
Knock it on the, head after that.
I can't see them knocking on the head. As long as it makes money, they won't knock it on the
head.
Just
keep bringing out more Spider-Mans, and they'll just do that, and they'll just... There's no one else to defeat, is there? You're right.
But, I mean, done. You can say the same for X-Men.
Yeah.
Once Apocalypse is done.
Yeah.
Where do you go?
Yeah.
We're going to have to start making superhero films. None of this.
No more Mac and me, too.
None of this. Yeah, that's it.
Maybe they'll go down the route that the comics did in sort of the late 80s, early 90s, and just start doing like Alien versus Predator versus Batman.
Yeah.
Just for no reason, just because they have to do something.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready to score this, if you guys are.
Yeah, I will. I just want to say before we do, this is a more serious review than I thought it was going to be, which I think kind of reflects that the film is more serious than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It's not dark in the same way like Batman Superman is dark, but it's a thoughtful film.
It's the tone of it.
Yeah.
In the respect of the subject matter you're dealing with, it is that kind of, could you, in the real world, it's a bit like how Watchmen deals with superheroes.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you let them run amok?
Yeah.
No, you can't.
Cause... Yeah. It's about big questions. Questions like that, and then things like, you know, disillusion of friendships and partnerships.
It's
and
a deep film.
It's a deeper film
than
I thought.
And I think it's
going
to be a one that we rewatch again and again at home, like we do with Captain America 2, and we will love more and more.
Mm-hmm.
The more you watch it, you'll, I didn't notice that, and this was good. And I'm going to go and see it again in the cinema, because I just want to relax now and enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
And before we do score it quickly, I just want to ask, have you read Civil War, as I have?
Mm-hmm.
And with the news that obviously Chris Evans was going to take a break from acting after this.
Yeah.
Huge spoiler.
Yeah.
In the comic, the death of Steve Rogers.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that this didn't happen?
Yes, absolutely I was. Because, you know, in the comics, he's killed by Crossbones.
Yeah.
And then Crossbones gets killed pretty quickly in this film. So I'm thinking, okay, that's a bit of a curveball. Steve will still die, but it'll be someone else who kills him. And then he just doesn't die.
I was incredibly shocked by it. Because this is one of the things, I guess, that kind of left me a bit flat from the film. Because it was something I was thinking should happen.
Yeah.
Because it's a big moment in Civil War. It's a big moment for Marvel. And it would have felt like the film accomplished something at the end of it.
Yeah.
But he didn't. And now he's still alive. And it's, what are they going to do? Have they signed him on for another film?
I really don't know.
I was expecting a death. I didn't know who, but I was expecting a big death where we all see them all mourn and it really makes an impact on why they fought.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit like, oh, okay, this has been quite an all right ending.
Because I think they kind of pulled a punch with that, because you had War Machine who took a bad spill.
Yeah.
And then he's in hospital and his spine is broken, all this. They could have killed him off and that would have done exactly what you've just said. But instead of doing that, they just got Tony to give him some special legs so he can walk, so his paralysis is gone already. So they kind of just rubbed it out straight away.
Yeah, Bucky's arm was completely ripped off, but then he was all right. So
yeah,
there was no way. More deaths.
More
deaths
we need.
Yeah.
Just think it would have accomplished something. Sent the film goers home with a bit of like, oh, wow.
Like we did with Batman and Superman. Superman right now, for me, is dead. I don't know what's going on.
Mm.
You know, so.
More deaths, please, Marvel.
Right,
let's
to
score
go.
It because I'm really intrigued. I want Adam to go first because I think Adam seems the least jazzed about it of the three of us.
I wouldn't say least jazzed. I mean, it's a solid 8 for me, so I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah.
I'd feel amiss if I gave it more than that, just because of how critical I was with Age of Ultron for not really progressing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it'd be fair for me to give it higher than an 8.
That's fair enough. Yeah. It's me too. It's an 8 for me as well. Very much so. A high 8, I would say. A high 8, and maybe on repeat viewings a 9. But I really enjoyed it for now. It's an 8.
It's no Deadpool for me. So I can't score it above that. Is it the best superhero film ever made? Probably not right now.
Mm.
Was it a bloody good film to go and watch with you guys? Yes. Let's do it 8.
Yeah,
I think that's
8.
Fair. I'm happy with that.
So, Captain America Civil War, 8 out of 10.
Competition time. So on the last episode, thanks to our good friends at Universal, we had the opportunity for a TV to be given away, a big 42-inch high definition TV. And the question we put out there was for the new Warcraft film. Who directed the film Warcraft? Nice, simple, not too easy. You had to do a bit of research, and the answer was Duncan Jones. Mm-hmm. Now, the winner of this TV is via Facebook, and it's Andrew Fellon, a big regular listener, so we'll be sending that out to you. Send us some photos as well. I want to see it all set up and nice. I'm quite jealous of this prize, to be honest. It's quite a good one.
And when you say we'll be sending out, not literally. I'm not going down the post office with a 42-inch telly.
£3 each for stamps. Might get there. Send it second class, it'll do. Now, I also want to keep the competitions going and get some more prizes. So Universe have been really good and promote Bad Neighbours 2, which is out next week. They've given us some five promotion packs here, which include T-shirts, sunglasses, a Bluetooth speaker, which looks pretty cool if you're out in the park or you want to go somewhere, and some normal rucksacks, not backpacks, rucksacks. There's some really cool prizes.
What's the difference?
No bat on it. Just it's just going to have the film on it instead of a backpack. Now, I think we should make it a little bit harder, but not too hard. What is the name of the character played by Seth Rogen in Bad Neighbours? That seems pretty easy.
Yep.
Go on.
If you've got access to IMDb, it is.
Or Google or anything.
I've just got a bit of a bone to pick here because I've entered the last two competitions now and I've been out by sort of one letter, two letters here and there. So obviously the first time it was Zack Snyder and I put Zack Ryder by accident. Mm-hmm. And this time it's Duncan Jones. Well, I put Duncan James from Blue.
More for you, mate.
Imagine that film if he had made it.
I thought when I heard that I heard Duncan James was directing it, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. He's from Blue.
I met him once. I used to work for a radio company back in the day, and we had this event.
That's why Ben sounds the most professional out of all of us.
Yeah. We had this event at Ponds Forge in Sheffield, and the entertainment for the evening was Blue. And it was because it was like a company event, it was free booze. So I got liquored up pretty quick. And then Anthony Costa from Blue, I called him a
The entertainment was Blue. Did the company hate you?
Apparently, yeah.
What did he do for you to call him that?
I just think he was there.
The thing is, it got missold to Ben. He was like, do you want loads of drinks? And the evening's just going to be Blue. He was thinking, oh, a bit of porn. I can't wait for this. Arrived, and there it is.
Big old circle jerk.
So to end of this competition, I'm looking forward to your answer for the who's Seth Rogen's character is. I'm looking forward to this.
I keep setting up these accounts and entering, but I never win.
Go on skiptheend.co.uk. Our Facebook is on there, our Twitter and our Instagram and our email, and I'll read out the winners on the next episode.
Get back in time. We love this, don't we? We all do.
We do.
It's not just me. Mm-hmm. Mark loves it now. It's the 80s.
Yep.
Ben, you've loved it for a long time anyway.
Big time.
Absolutely. It's one of those times where we get to talk. We actually literally get to jerk off about a film that we love.
So you've misused the word literally there.
Oh, the listeners aren't supposed to know that it is literally, are they?
No, that's why we don't have like a webcam film.
So it's why we can't do them live either. Yeah. I know you've asked. We can't.
But the listeners love it as well. I love that they can take part and they're kind of here with us right now, but not jerking.
No, well, there might be. Some of them may be.
That's a competition prize for the future. Come jerk with us.
Oh, Christ. Come on, please.
Yeah, yes. let's move on from that. So it's 1986 now. Mark, we're well and truly deep into the 80s now.
Mm-hmm. Feels good.
Balls deep.
Feels brilliant.
Can we just stop mentioning balls and jerking?
No more. Stop now, that's it.
Let's just have that free now from the podcast.
It's released. It's out of our system.
So it's 1986. Mark, watch your film.
I'm going to say it now. I believe that more than one of us would have the same this week.
Me too.
I believe that it's quite... I think me and Ben might be on the same page again, which will be the first ever time that we've done it for two times in a row.
Yeah, it would only be the third time in Skip Back history that you and I have agreed.
Aliens.
Aliens.
Yes!
Aliens. The trifecta, we've all got it. Standard.
There wasn't even another choice for me this year.
No, me neither.
It is better, in my opinion, than Alien. It's more of a horror. Mm-hmm. It's in my top five films of all time, which is... was revisited after we'd done the podcast for a year, and I stuck at it. It didn't move.
Yep.
A couple of did make way, I think, for Back to the Future, but this stuck there. It's one of the greatest films ever made. Forget just the films in the 80s or 86. Sigourney Weaver is absolutely incredible as a female lead. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The story's fantastic. It's scary as shit. And it's perfectly well made.
We actually did do it as a rewatch not that long ago. So there is an episode where we do figuratively jerk off about it for a good 20 minutes. But it bears repeating how great it is. And one of the things I love about it, as you say there, Mark, you prefer it to the first because it's more of a horror. That is why I love the film so much, in that it's very much of a piece with the original, but they're two very different types of film. Alien is kind of a war film, mm-hmm. but Aliens is a horror film. But they don't feel massively different. They don't feel like they're in separate universes. They very much flow from one to the next, but are their own thing individually as well.
And they both blur the genre from horror and action all into the same sort of thing. Aliens does it a bit more with the action horror thing, I think.
Yeah.
They kind of blend the line a bit more. James Cameron does a fantastic job with the direction of the film and how everything's done, how everything's shot, the construction, the composition, everything about it is absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into the Alien versus Aliens debate. We've had it before. I prefer Alien,
yeah.
but there's no fault there. To say I prefer Alien to Aliens is not compared, not saying it's bad, it's at all.
No.
It's saying, I like this, it's brilliant.
I love this, and I love this one a little
bit
more.
And I love this a little bit more. Yeah.
Which of the two things you need to exist do you prefer more, oxygen or water?
Exactly, yes. Yeah. What would you prefer to have? It doesn't matter if I don't have one of them dead anyway. So, but that's it. And they, you've hit the nail on the head. They're both intrinsically the same universe. You can mm-hmm. see that. But vastly different, yet very similar, all in the same mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to watch and realize that.
Yeah, big time.
What I'm really happy about as well is that they never made another sequel after Aliens. That was
yeah,
it.
That was,
that was
one.
It done. Yeah. They never made Alien 3 or anything.
No,
it.
No
yeah.
sequels, no spin-offs, no jamming it together with another Alien from a different film series. None of that. They didn't happen.
That's what I'm really chuffed with, because they could have easily done that.
Oh, they could have. They could have.
And that would have gone really down.
They could have money grabbed. They could have cash spun. But they really stuck with their integrity and they didn't.
And it's rare in Hollywood, integrity. It's a dirty word in Hollywood, but they did it with this franchise, didn't they?
It is. I mean, they certainly didn't cast like Winona Ryder.
No. They didn't almost derail David Fincher's career right at the start of the career either, you know. No.
certainly not.
Did you guys know that this month there's actually an Alien Day?
I did not.
So they're actually bringing out on the 26th of April, it's official Alien Day.
Because it's the 30-year anniversary, presumably.
Something like that.
Well, yeah, because it was 1986, so it'll be the 30th
there
anniversary.
There you go. Which is nice. But they're going to bring out loads of like limited edition trainers. All the cinemas in the UK are doing them back to back, which is really cool. Loads of like T-shirt designs, artworks all coming out. So we've done that quite well. Good timing to kind of jump on that. But if you look out there, the one thing I really want to get, you know, Mondo do all the nice artwork. Mm-hmm. They're releasing the soundtrack for Alien and Aliens in a clear vinyl, but the vinyl's got green liquid in it. So when you move the vinyl, it all kind of splurts. Cool. Oh, it looks awesome.
That's cool.
But you heard that, Mondo. Those limited, very rare 1,000 prints. But yeah, these films are perfect, and to watch them back to back work perfectly. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's nice to see we've done it again.
Yeah.
Should we
get to the social media? Because there's not a lot more we can say about this film that we've talked
that we've not already
about.
Said.
Exactly.
Right, David Tate, Top Gun or Highlander? Mind you, there can only be one. I love what
Brilliant.
He's done there.
Nice little gag there.
Good films. Top Gun, great, I think. Wayne Saunders, this is so hard, but I'm going to go with Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Awesome film.
A film that I hadn't seen until about a year ago when Mark and I went to see it at a little cinema. And I was just blown away by it. I thought it was hilarious and brilliant. And I've watched it about 5 times since.
This is one I thought might just get in there by one of us. Nathan O'Connor Sr. has put Howard the Duck.
Well, if there's any one of us three that we're going to choose.
Yeah, it's a close. Kim Scally has put Labyrinth.
Yeah.
Great film. Austin Kane has put Top Gun. This has been a real popular one. Joe Mayers has put, guys, you want to go see a dead body? And I was like, what? But then I forgot it's a quote from Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Thought it was just actually offering to take us out for the day. Joe Flores, Star Trek IV, The Voyager Home?
Nope.
Really? In this year?
At Ken Major 83. These are some really good films for me. Short Circuit and Flight the Navigator.
Yeah.
Nice. Oh, so
proper
good.
Proper 80s cheese.
Kieran Leeson, Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Great film.
So that oh. Tim Harris, legend.
Yeah.
Not with Tom Hardy either. And finally, 10K Movies, Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
That's a great film.
Feed me now.
What's his name again? Rick
Moranis.
Where is he? We've mentioned this. I want to see him. I want him back.
He was just happy with his lot in life and retired at the time.
And who can blame him? Look at his filmography. He's been in some absolute brilliant films.
Yeah. I want him back.
Well, they wanted him back for the new Ghostbusters. Yeah. And he said, nah, I'm all right.
He probably read the script. I think on 86 there, has there ever been a more 80s film than Top Gun?
We did that. One of our early topics, we did our top three or five quintessentially 80s movies, and I think one or many of us picked Top Gun. It is as 80s as it gets.
When you think about it, it's like, I don't think there's anything more quintessentially 80s than Top Gun.
Top Gun and Wall Street, I would say, are the two for me.
So next time we go to 1985.
What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder.
These go to 11.
Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, where the banshees live and they do live well. Stonehenge, where a man is a man and the children dance to the pipes of Pan. Ho!
It's time for the rewatch. Mm. Now, I've been known for basically coming out and giving us really bad films to watch.
Oh, whoa. Troll. You're being too hard on yourself now. You're Birdemic, remember? That was yours.
Classic.
And I said it. I wasn't going to set you up. I wanted it to be a film that we all love and that we could all enjoy. So I picked This Is Spinal Tap. It wasn't I can't wait to see if Adam and Ben like this film. I know we all bloody love this film because it's impossible not to love it. Yeah. And if you don't love it, you're dead inside and you should go and end it. Now, this film is fantastic from start to finish. It's a really well-made film that followed the band Spinal Tap, mm-hmm. basically on their tour, what they're up to backstage. We get to see the band individually and all together, and it's just basically life on the road. There isn't much more to say. There's lots and lots of different things that happen. I'm going to go straight to Ben. Mm-hmm. Just tell me why you love it so much. That's all I want you to do.
It is one of the single funniest films in the history of the medium. We did our top three or five comedies back in the day, another topic we did a long while ago, and this was in mine. It may have been in some of yours as well. I raved about it then. I'll rave about it now. It's timeless. One of the things about comedy is comedy doesn't necessarily age well. You would think on the surface that funny is always funny, but in practice, that's not always true. All you have to do is watch a British 70s sitcom to realise that comedy doesn't always age well. But this film has. The jokes in it are as timeless now as they were then. They are still funny, especially because the idea of a kind of vain, slightly over-the-hill rock band touring the world still happens now.
It still resonates.
Exactly. And one of the things that you'll find if you go online and read about the film and real musicians' responses to it is that when it came out in the early 80s and all the way up to now when people talk about it, they say, I didn't find it funny because it was too real for me. It was, you know, you hear people like Glenn Danzig and I think Kurt Cobain and Dave Grohl said it as well. People from Pearl Jam said it. They said, it's just too real. This feels like our life. I think apparently Steven Tyler from Aerosmith hated it.
It was basically his home video. Yeah,
especially because I think Aerosmith at the time had released a record, around the same time it had released a record with Stonehenge on the cover. So they weren't big fans. But it has just aged so brilliantly. And I watched it, having not watched it in maybe a year or two, and I know how funny it is because I love it, but even still I'd kind of forgotten how funny it was to the point where I was rewinding stuff because when I was laughing at one joke, I'd missed another and had to go back, and it's magnificent.
It's a sign of a good comedy though, mm-hmm. isn't it? Like, if you have to rewind it, if you have to sit there and think, what have I just missed? And then you start laughing all over again.
Yeah.
But you've really hit the nail on the head there. It's timeless. Because it's not a comedy film about a recent current event or something like that. Something that is going to be dated. You know, when you see TV shows that made jokes about Tiger Woods' affairs and things like that, it was funny at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
When you look back on it years later.
Wasn't for his wife. No, it definitely wasn't
funny. It wasn't for him either. He crashed his car. Well,
you say that. Did you see the divorce settlement she got? She's fine.
Yeah. Bunce Burner. Nice.
But it's one of those things where it aged. The joke's gone now. When you rewatch stuff like that, it's not funny. But this, it is. It still resonates. There are still bands going today who are going around touring, and they probably shouldn't be anymore. Yeah.
Status quo.
I completely agree with you. And Rob Reiner is an absolute genius for doing this. Everything about this film is absolutely hilarious, from the overly elaborate stage props that they have to the underly elaborate stage props they have in Stonehenge. But the songs as well, like if you actually sit down and listen to the lyrics of the songs. You just sit there when they're doing this, a bit that always makes me laugh, when that kind of Air Force sort of dance that they're doing for military men on leave, and they're singing Sex Farm.
I love it. I think it's later on in the film, Derek Smalls, Harry Shearer's character, he's talking about how Sex Farm has brought a really sophisticated look at sex.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Things like Heavy Duty as well.
And
Hellhole.
Hellhole, super.
whoever wrote these songs, whoever actually came up with this music,
Harry Shearer, Michael McKean, Christopher Guest, the three main members.
McKean is actually a guitarist, isn't he?
The three members of the band wrote all the songs and played all the songs. There's no subterfuge here. There's no like real band behind the scenes. They did all of this. That is why this film is as genius as it is.
It's even more impressive in that respect.
Absolutely.
Chris Guest as Nigel Tufnell, Harry Shearer as Derek Smalls, and Michael McKean, who we know more recently as Chuck. Chuck McGill. Absolutely just so funny. So funny. Mm-hmm. And the story about the drummers. All their drummers keep dying. And there's a fantastic bit where the interviewer, Martin Berger, kind of asks the current drummer, are you not worried? And he says, well, no, because you know, I'm probably going to be the one that survives, basically. Oh, so the law of averages is on your side then. They can't all die.
Even though I think at that point, 32 drummers had died.
Stumpy Pete died in a...
There was Joe Stumpy Peeps, and then Eric Stumpy Joe Childs.
Who died in a bizarre gardening accident.
The authorities said it was best left unsolved.
The line that I had to make a note of this was, he choked on vomit. It didn't mean it was his vomit. It could have been someone else.
It could have been anyone's, but you can't dust for vomit.
You can't dust for vomit. But I think the line that gets me every time I watch it, and I have to say every single time I watch it, always makes me laugh, is, well, no, I mean, she should be forced to smell the glove. Just not, you know, over and over again.
The line that had me in bits, I was actually crying with laughter, is this bit when they're in a hotel and they see another musician come through, and he's obviously booked at this bigger arena and he's, you know, he's above them and stuff. And they're talking about how once he supported them and about how they had to sort of, you know, win the crowd back over, and they said, they were still booing when we were on.
So we had to apologise, They were still booing him when we came.
When I was watching this film again yesterday, I watched it twice. Normally I do one rewatch, but I watched it again just because I enjoyed it so much. I thought to myself, imagine being on set and how many takes they would have had to have done not break character. And you know that 90% of this film is improvised. They're just trying to make each other laugh. And what I was trying to do is I think I was watching Nigel's character while Dave was talking, and you could just see him laughing in the background. But you thought that's got to be the best take they could get that day, because you just thought to yourself, there's no way that, you know, they could have just kept it together.
I think the perfect example of that is when Marty DeBerge, Rob Reiner's character, is interviewing him. He's talking about the reviews they've had, and he's talking about the review for their album Shark Sandwich. And he said the review was simply a two-word review: shit sandwich. And then you see Christopher Guest and Michael McKean like stifling laughter, they're putting their hands to their face, and then just going, "You can't print that.
Who printed that? You can't." The best is the Gospel According to Spinal Tap. And what day did God invent Spinal Tap? And could he not have rested on that day as well? And they just go, "Well, yeah, that's a good one."
And it's so brilliant because you can tell that Rob Reiner had obviously pre-prepared these lines, but the rest of the crew had no idea they were coming, and their reactions were so genuine.
Intravenous Demila.
What did you guys think of the character Janine? Because obviously she comes in as that kind of third party, and gets in the way of like David and Nigel's kind of love. Mm-hmm. she's annoying as hell. Yeah. But I like the fact that that dynamic does come into the mix. And I'm sure there's a making of on the DVD, and there's Kasabian on there and Kings of Leon and Ricky Gervais is on there. Mm-hmm. And they're all saying, like, when I was in a band, they were like, this is Sarah at our college, or this was Louise at uni. And you just think to yourself, you know that bitch. Everyone knows that bitch.
She hung on to the band. She got involved with one of them.
That was it.
I liked it when Michael McKean's character... Davidson Hubbins. He says, oh, Janine's coming out. She's going to meet us in Milwaukee. And then Nigel says, what? She's going to come and drop some stuff off and go back. He's like, no, she's coming on tour.
But it's one of those films as well that you kind of watch all the way through to the end credits, because some of the stuff they do towards the end, during the credits, is fantastic. There's the bit where he's talking to Nigel Tufnell, because that's actually my insides. He's got the skeleton printed on his shirt. Yeah. Oh, but it's not actually, because that's green. Yeah, mine are green as well. No, they're not. Yeah, it's all the veins and things.
What are you saying to him? Oh, this guitar. No, don't touch it. You can't touch it. I was just pointing at it. Well, don't point it either. Can I look at it? No.
Come on, it's enough of that.
Listen, you can hear the reverb. I can't hear anything. Yeah, because you're not playing it.
Yeah, because it's not plugged in.
If I played it, you go out for a bite, come back, and you still...
Such a brilliant...
His guitar solos as well. Oh, just that scene where he's on the stage and he's got like the one set of the guitar set up in the stand and he's playing it with his foot while he's playing the other one, and he gets the violin and starts scraping it against his guitar.
I love the bit when he's playing it with the violin and then he realises that the violin is out of tune, so he tunes it ever slightly and then carries on.
What's the song when they're all playing bass guitar as well?
Oh, Big Bottoms. Fat
Big Bottoms, yeah, that's it.
Absolutely awesome. There's a character that I really love in this film, and I don't think he gets enough screen time. Artie Fufkin.
Yeah.
Artie Fufkin. Polymer Records. Artie Fufkin. Polymer Records.
Artie Fufkin. But he's such a twit. But I love the fact where he's like, just kick my ass. Go on. Yes. Enjoy it. Go on. Enjoy it. Come on. Kick my ass.
No one turns up to the album.
And everyone's, again, when I was reading all these interviews with bands, everyone knows this guy. I'm from Polydor Records. I'm just a complete and utter dweeb, but Artie Fufkin.
Everything about this film is brilliant.
I was just about to say, did anyone like it? Do you enjoy it, guys?
I'm not keen on it. Do you know on IMDb, when you go and look for a film, you can rate it yourself out of 10? This is the only film on their system that allows you to rate it out of 11.
That's genius.
How great is that?
That is absolutely awesome.
I like that. That's very good. This one louder.
But why don't you just make 10 louder? This one goes up to 11.
I like the silence as well, where you hear him thinking, but it goes to 11.
It's funny how many weird little cameos are in it as well. There's a bit near the start where they're at like an industry or record label event, and the waiters are mimes. And the two mimes are Billy Crystal and Dana Carvey, a.k.a. Garth from Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And there's loads of just little weird cameos thrown out through it like that. And some of the weird throwaway jokes as well, visual jokes that you don't necessarily pay attention to. I think it's that the same industry do. You see that David and Nigel have both got really bad coal sores, indicating they've got like herpes from some sort of dirty, you know, groupie. But it's not... They don't discuss it.
No, it's not. That's a good point. I was watching yesterday. One's on his chin and one's on the top of his lip. Just an absolute pleasure to watch this film, wasn't it? It was so good to revisit. And I think it's probably been about 8 or 10 years since I've watched this film. And like I said, I watched it and then I watched it again, just like you said. Yeah. I was laughing. It was so good.
What I did is Christopher Guest is known for these sort of mockumentaries now. That was his first one, and he's done several since. So after watching Spinal Tap, I'd seen his other ones anyway, but I watched them all again. So after watching Spinal Tap, I then watched Best in Show, which is genius. I watched A Mighty Wind. Have you seen A Mighty Wind?
Nope.
I know.
It's, again, another one of these mockumentaries, but it's about folk music. And the three guys from Tap play a folk band called The Folksmen. And it's about them getting back to do this sort of tribute gig for their old manager who died. And
Why have I never seen this?
I don't know
why
you
know
this. Have you seen Best in Show?
No.
About the dog show?
I've not seen it.
That's where they're all competitive. It's like a Crufts thing. That's amazing. Oh, man, go and
find... I'm going to have a whole weekend of this.
Just do it, because that's what I did last night, basically. Go and find all the Christopher Guest mockumentaries, because they are magnificent. Another one is what called Waiting for Guffman, where Christopher Guest plays like this stage actor who thinks there's going to be a Broadway producer in, so he's putting on this play. Oh my God, it's so funny.
I'm loving the fact that this is now. I'm not just giving it, like, someone goes, oh, do you like this band? Here's 20 albums by it. You're going, here you go. This is awesome.
Go and find the Christopher Guest mockumentaries. They are amazing.
Fantastic stuff. I mean... One of the lines that's always made me laugh in this film is when they're talking about Saucy Jack. The musical based on the life and times of Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
And there's a bit where they talk about kind of the future, and he goes, yeah, you know, people envy us. And David St. Ubbers goes, I envy us.
He's a naughty one, Saucy Jack. He's a haughty one, Saucy Jack.
I'm ready to score this, I think. One thing
I wanted to say, sorry, is you touched on this, Adam, about Michael McKean, how we know him more, we know him more recently from Better Call Saul. Michael McKean, historically, I think he comes from an improv comedy background and has done a lot of these kind of films. He's one of those guys who pops up here, there, and everywhere. He's not known for his dramatic work, but he has been a revelation, really, in Better Call Saul. You know, he, not only is he this brilliant comedian and musician, he's also a great dramatic actor as well. These guys...
From day one in Better Call Saul as well, much to the end of the big reveal towards the end of Series 1.
Yeah.
Into Season 2 as well.
Yeah.
He's been... far and away, absolutely superb.
The Season 2 finale, I think, for me, is his best work. He's unbelievable in
absolutely amazing.
And just these guys are just so phenomenally talented. It's annoying.
It's amazing to see that he's still, like you said, he's getting better and better. And how many years? When was Spinal Tap?
84, something like that.
84, correct, yeah.
Oh, perfect.
coming up in two episodes time.
So, do you want to score this?
Yeah, go on then.
I'm going to give it 10.
Yeah.
Because it's... The best way to sum it up is, like you said, it's a timeless classic that you will still laugh at now.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear people like Ricky Gervais who have took influence to make The Office and stuff. It's still now giving year after year. Everyone I've ever met who I've introduced to this film loves it.
Yeah.
Bear.
Any age, anyone, they love it. If I could give it 11, joking aside, I would.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to make you read it.
Well, no, you know how anal I am about things, and I control the website, and I would not put the review down as 11. I just wouldn't allow it.
So there's no point. Yeah. But it's 10.
I don't care. I'm giving it 11.
And I'm interpreting that as 10, and that's how it's going on the website.
It's a missed opportunity if we don't, so I'm giving it 11.
We can give it an honorary 11, but we're all actually going to give it 10.
Perfect.
For a perfect 10 out of 10, because it is perfect.
So the next rewatch, I was just about to stop recording, like, it is perfect.
That's it, yeah, done.
Yeah, no more rewatches.
It's done.
Oh, whose pick is it?
It's mine.
Oh, here we go.
Good luck topping this.
We've obviously been to see Captain America Civil War.
Yup.
Prior to this, we've been to see Batman versus Superman as well.
Mm-hmm.
Two of the big comic book films coming out this year. So I want to revisit a comic book film in our next rewatch. But I'm not going to go with one of the major studios. I want to revisit a Dark Horse comic book character.
Oh, I think I know what it might be.
The Mask.
Yeah, lovely stuff.
So we're going to watch the 1994 Jim Carrey film, The Mask.
Just listen for a minute. Mr. Stein, listen to it.
I'm not hearing anything.
You would, though, if it were playing.
It's now time for the imitation game. I had a lot of fun taking part last week, but it's now my time to
shine as Quizmaster.
To have a bit of time off and practice.
Let's see if you can get one of these.
Tell them what the game is, Mark, for those who didn't hear it last time.
Basically, we get 10 names and put them in a glorious pot.
Mm-hmm.
Each of you take a turn to pick one out. You then have to do an impression of that name you pick. That sounds good. And it did go online, that picture. So if you missed it, go on our Instagram and see the picture of the pot. The 10 pieces. You'll act out that impression, and hopefully the other person will get it right. But, as games master here, if I don't think you're putting the effort in, you're not going to get the point. And
it's
I'm going to be quite
point,
strict.
Isn't it? You're going to want to win a game finally. Yeah. So it's Chris, he's good. Nope.
But the best bit that Ben kind of threw in last week was you only get one guess.
Yes.
So that's good. It's good fun, but I'm looking forward now to kind of just being a bit more in control. So what was our team name last week?
We were...
You were Team Madam.
Madam, that's it, team, Madam.
Famous name. And this week it's Team Badam.
Children of Badam.
Children of Badam.
Oh, man. Why do I only get Team Madam and you get Children of Badam? But I'm looking forward to this.
Well, the pot's over.
I'm confident that the score that me and Adam got of 6 out of 10 is quite good for
pretty
the first
good.
Go.
Pretty good.
But I know that you guys are going to probably beat this. But I've not made them that easy. So let's start with Adam. You pick your first one, and I'm looking forward to this.
It's going to be some bloke I've never heard of.
Yeah. The guy that holds the camera on Clerks 2.
Oh, God. Shit.
Has Mark screwed us already with Impossible?
No, Impossible. No, it's my brain's gone dead. Mm. Me, yeah. My name's Murd.
Is that Matthew McConaughey?
It's supposed to be.
That's terrible. If I was Mark, I would veto that. You can't just say a name of a film he was in.
No, he does actually say that's what he answers the kids.
I did that. All right. Earlier, you could have just copied that.
That's what I was trying to remember.
Are you giving us the point or not?
Because it's... You've got to remember this, okay, for the future. I'm going to give you the point because it's the first one of this round. But also, I was hoping you were going to try and do that... Interstellar crying scene. Just sit there and cry.
Unfortunately, it's not mine. I can't pretend I'm behind a fifth dimensional bookcase.
Right, here we go. Then what have I got? I'm late. I must go down the rabbit hole.
That's actually brilliant.
Oh, I know the character. I don't know who voiced him. Man, you can do more than one quote, man. Come on.
There's so many.
Come aboard my ship in my chocolate factory.
Johnny Depp?
Yes! That's incredible.
So the first was my Alice in Wonderland impression, and the second was obviously my Willy Wonka. Neither were good, but you got it.
I bet he's absolutely gutted that you picked his two worst films. You know?
Yeah, it's difficult. He didn't say anything in Edward Scissorhands.
Why didn't you use him as Tusk?
Because no one would have got that. Thankfully, I've not seen a lot of films with this guy in.
Adam Sandler.
I'm in love with Katie Holmes. I'm in love with Katie Holmes. I'm in love with Katie Holmes.
Tom Cruise. Was that his famous jumping on the sofa scene on Oprah?
You had so many characters you could have chosen.
Are we 3 for 3?
Yeah. Yay.
Again, it's a really famous one, but it's hard to do a quote. Oh, okay, here's one. If I can do it.
If you get it from that, you can have 2 points.
I want to say one of the clumps. Eddie Murphy. Yes!
That was Eddie's laugh. Yes!
How the hell?
It sounded like Sherman Clump's laugh.
It was.
There's cheating going on here.
How could it be?
You've got to cover the paper because I reckon you can see.
I dropped a steaming Norbit in his lap and he got it.
I appreciate that.
That was unbelievable. Wow, is that 4 for 4?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is the quote.
Mm-hmm. Silent acting doesn't work on radio, mate. You need to do an actual quote.
It does work. I got nothing.
Kevin Smith as Silent Bob.
Yeah.
Yes!
I'm going to let you just have that.
It was perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a few comments there that from Adam helped a little bit. I'm going to tighten the reins here a bit.
Skip to the end.
Simon Pegg.
Correct.
And people do say that you sound like him on this podcast.
I'll take that. That's fine.
That was the ideal person to get that.
It was.
And a nice little plug. This to now beat Madam.
Oh, fucking hell. I literally don't know a single quote from this man.
Oh, it could be a draw.
So have we got 6 out of 6 so far then?
Yeah. The pressure's on now.
Mm-hmm.
You could bottle it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass because I don't even know who this guy is.
Oh.
I really don't. I've literally no idea who Kevin James is. I think he's a guy, he's a director, isn't he? I don't think I've seen him.
He's a documentarian. He was the guy who directed the famous documentaries Paul Blart Mall Cop and Paul Blart Mall Cop 2.
Yeah, but he doesn't actually go in them. So I think that's a bit of a dodgy one.
It's a dodgy one, actually. I think we should get a point for that, Mark.
Nope.
Oh. Sorry. I think that's really bad. You can't just put someone who's not actually been in the film on it.
Well, you've still got 3 left, so you can easily get 9.
This is... this isn't going to go well. This is the bad part, Mr. Wayne. That is terrible.
Tom Hardy.
No, it was supposed to be Morgan Freeman.
I thought it was
Bane. He has the most distinctive voice ever.
And I can't do it.
You should just start talking about penguins.
That's
or something.
What I was going to do at first.
See, now it's getting tough. The pressure is
really on.
We're
stuck on 6.
How the fuck am I supposed to do this? God's sake.
I know what it is.
Sorry, Ben. I'm going to have to let the team down.
You're passing again?
I've got to.
Shocking.
You're going to pass?
I can't do one. I've literally no idea how this is going to work.
Do your best. It can't be worse than my Morgan Freeman.
Just remember, if you don't...
It can.
If you don't do one right now, the pressure's on him. Yeah. Otherwise, it's a draw.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, because then me and you could win it next week.
Team Barky Bark.
No, I can't even think of anything to say.
You're going to pass?
Yeah.
Go on then, who was
Angelina
it?
Angelina Jolie. Oh, I can't even think of a memorable quote from her.
Could have done Tomb Raider or Gone in 60 Seconds, you know, all those classic lines.
What's memorable there?
Come raid my tomb.
And the last one for
so
Ben.
This is to win it, so at the minute...
And I want you to cover the back so we can't see through.
He's getting well paranoid about it.
I've never won a game. Just a draw would be nice.
Okay, Magneto, I'll come with you. No, I've changed my mind in this film. Well, maybe I'll come with you next time. No, I'm good again, Magneto.
Jennifer Lawrence?
Yes!
Yes! For the win.
Fair play. Team Badham, take the lead 7-6.
After all of that, we went through the entire pot and the last two were women.
It's as if I planned it. Pretty fair, that.
Mm-hmm.
I still think 7 is beatable next week.
Yeah.
For Barky Bark.
Children of Badham are out in the lead with 7.
You wait.
But
you wait until you get some out there Hungarian.
Silent film starts. Stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. Listener questions time, starting with Sue Howding. Do you guys prep for new releases by watching the previous films in the series if you're going to watch a release that's now got sequels or previous films?
Generally,
Like Dawn of Justice, I watched Man of Steel prior
to
it.
Yeah.
Just to kind of get, especially when you know the events of it are going to tie in as well. There was stuff like when I sat, it wasn't for the podcast, when I sat down to watch, I think it was Mockingjay Part 2, I didn't watch Part 1 again. But generally I try to,
yeah.
Ben's dedication for X-Men recently is...
Yeah, I went through the whole X-Men series, so I'm prepped, fully ready for Apocalypse, yeah.
I watched Age of Ultron as well before we went to see Cap
3.
Yeah, I watched all the Rocky films apart from the 5th one before we went to see Creed,
the
stuff
one that
like
doesn't
that.
Exist,
yeah. Yeah, we're pretty on it
like
that.
That, yeah.
Jessica Holder, do you guys think you'll actually make it to episode 100?
I didn't think we'd make it to 10. and we're very close to 50. So yes, I think.
Yeah, as long as we're enjoying it, I can't see why. I would like to end on 99 just to piss people off.
Brilliant. So build up a fan base and then drop a Norbit on them.
Well, you know from the story earlier about Secret Cinema, he tries to be a bit of a juicy dangler.
That's right.
Oh, Adam Richards, this is going to annoy you, Adam. Sorry to sound like Short Circuit, but Ben, I want some more books. Need input. That's what he's put. Doesn't want our input.
Needs to get his own life and his own thoughts.
We said on the last episode what actual books I'm reading.
He wants more.
Novel, I'm just about to start The Girl on the Train, which is meant to be very good, and it's just been made into a movie starring Emily Blunt. It's supposedly the new Gone Girl.
Sold.
So I should be reading that recently. But I'm on a comics kick again at the minute. I'm reading The Authority, which was an old Wildstorm comic written by Warren Ellis. So if you want to get into your comics, read The Authority.
The Authority, cool. at Brooksy17. If you guys could all quit your jobs and do something within the movie industry for a full-time living, porn not allowed, what would you choose?
This.
It's got to be with a bit more in the industry, I think he's saying.
I think film, I think
just carry on doing the podcast.
Criticism, I think reviews, that's within the film industry.
I think the producer is the money role. Quite literally, it's the role. They've got all the money, they spend the money, they choose what's going to get made. They get to lord it over the director and the actors and make all the decisions. Producer.
I want to do this, I want to review, because that means I don't have to do anything except criticise others.
It suits you nicely, yeah.
And I'm pretty good at that, so...
I'd like to be a director, just to direct a film, just to have my name on it and say I did that. It would be shit. It would be the worst film ever, but I would just want to do it.
It'd be a hybrid of The Room and Mac and Me, wouldn't it?
With any luck, he'll produce what you're directing and I'll panic critically.
Sounds good.
Mate, he'd be fired. After a couple of weeks, I'd replace him.
Mark, why have you put an alien on every scene drinking Coke?
I'd get Josh Trank in.
Resurge his career.
Christopher Spurlock, which is at Tangy Pop. Most movie tropes suck and make most movies too predictable. But are there any that you actually enjoy?
I kind of like I'm a sucker for an underdog story. So, you know, an underdog who looks like he's never going to achieve anything and then wins at the end tends to work for me.
Yeah. It's so cheesy, but I love the countdown timers on bombs that go on when it says like counting down from 10 seconds, but it's 20 minutes long. I love that.
Yeah.
I love them all day long.
I think things like stories of redemption always get me as well, because I'm a big comic book man as well. I think a story of redemption is always something that's going to grab me as well. So those sorts of like cliches and as Ben said, the underdog stories as well and things. You know the outcomes, but you don't care.
No, and there's a reason why tropes are prevalent, why they live on. It's because they work for the most part. People like them.
At AlRob1982. After the recent death of Prince, just wondered if you guys had seen Purple Rain, and do you count it as essential viewing?
No and no.
I've seen it, I think it's really good, but it's not the best film ever, and people will now say it is because he's passed away. Mm. Oh, it's the best thing ever. It's not. It's just pretty good. It's an all right film.
I've seen it, and I think essential viewing is a bit of an odd thing to say, because... You can class lots of things as essential viewing. I mean, if you go into any bookstore now, you see the 10,000 films to watch before you die.
Yeah.
Not realising there's probably not enough time to watch 10,000 films before you die. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly one of those films that if you like Prince's music, then yes, it's essential viewing.
For me, the major contribution that Prince has made to movies was the soundtrack to Batman.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
Very much so. And if you listen to our Batman rewatch, there's some music on there by Prince that we put in. He also asks, what's the best soccer film you've ever seen? I think this comes from last week.
Dude, it's When Saturday Comes. Everybody knows that.
I don't know what soccer is.
Soccer?
Because I hadn't seen that film, and I still haven't, I will, I'm going to go with Soccer Dog.
Which one? One or two?
One. I think the second one's just cashing in.
You see, the second one's my favourite, because that's when London plays Scotland.
Ooh, that biggie.
Yeah. The big derby.
Yeah.
Tim Johnson. What's your favourite movie genre, each of you? I'm horror. Horror all day, every day.
Sci-fi, probably.
Sci-fi, or if we're now considering superhero films to be their own genre, which I think they are, then I would say superhero as well.
At DC Yeti, with the bombshell that I found out on the last episode that you guys haven't seen Princess Bride, can you put it on the queue for a future rewatch?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we'll do that, Kev, but we're not saying when.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that none of us have seen. There's not often none of us have seen a film.
Yeah,
people love
especially
that film as well.
People love quite it. Like a cult classic as well.
I had a lot of tweets. What the hell have you not seen?
Usually, one of us has had like a bored Sunday where we've whacked on a cult classic that a lot of people.
So we'll make a pact now. The only time we watch it will be together for a rewatch.
Yeah, and as you say, people love it. We went to one of the MCM Comic Cons a few months ago. And Cary Elwes was there as one of the stars of it, and he was promoting a book about his experiences of it, and you know the crowd went wild for it.
Yeah, there were loads of people there listening to him talk.
Yeah.
Final question, and this is a bit political. Tastemakers, which is at Tastemakers Talk, you can only pick one other host from the podcast to go to the cinema with. Who do you choose? he's trying to cause. This is how we're not going to get to episode 100.
He's our Yoko.
I'm going to say it now. I will not go to the cinema with any one of them. I'm faithful. Unless Adam oversleeps, which does happen.
In my defense, it was a day after I'd flown back from Dallas.
Okay. But yeah, the inside story here. But no, I would not go with...
I'd got back in at like midnight on the Friday.
Okay, I'm picking Ben because he's more reliable.
Well, you two are going to New York together.
Yeah. We're going New York at the same time separately.
If that, we happen to bump
that's the story they've told me.
It was just a bit weird that we booked the same room at the hotel with one double bed.
They've gone for like a cheap hotel that's basically rang them up and said, look, unfortunately we've overbooked. You two are from the same place. Get any chance you can share, fellas?
We'll throw in a king size bed and jacuzzi. No, I would rather go with Ben. Only because he'll turn up 100% and not be jet lagged.
No, because you see, this is Mark's passive aggressive way of having a go.
I'm going to plead the fifth. I'm answering the question.
I'm just going to say neither of them. I actually secretly hate both of them. So.
He never overslept. He just didn't want to go to the cinema with us.
I'd literally have preferred to have gone by myself.
No, but you had that guy ruin it for you.
Oh, yeah, your Uncle Henry.
You thought you had it all
family.
To yourself. Yeah, but he was much better than me or Ben.
Well, you know, I personally think that whenever I go to the cinema, they should put like a little red velvet rope around me. And there should be someone coming up to ask me if I want a drink every now and then.
It'll come. It'll come by episode 100. That's what we expect.
But never mind.
Well, you're not going to break us up with questions like that.
No
I think
way.
That was fair. Yeah. So keep the questions
exactly.
coming.
Exactly. If we're going to break up, we're going to break up ourselves. Yeah,
we will fuck this up ourselves. We don't need your help.
Keep the nice questions coming on social media, Twitter and Facebook. You know the address by now. If not, go to skiptn.co.uk. And we look forward to them again in 2 weeks.
So that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End podcast. It's been a good one. There's been laughter. There's been tears.
There's been a lot of emotions. And I'm actually quite tired from laughing again. Yeah. I'm loving this.
And a few crappy impressions as well.
That's some bloody good ones. Yeah. My Eddie Murphy is up there. I could be on Saturday Night Live with that shit.
I had a lot of people saying to me, like, you are dreadful. But I tell you what, you come on this show, you put on a headset, you have a mic in front of you. It's difficult. I used to mock the people on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Now I know what they're like.
Yeah. By a lot of people, it of course means rich. You all know that's true.
Yeah, he gives me a lot of grief, but it's tough.
It is tough. So what have we got coming up on the next episode then? So who was rewatched? Was it Adam? I believe it's you. What are we watching?
We're going to be watching the 1994 film The Mask, based on the Dark Horse comic.
Yeah, a film that I've spoken about many times, was part of my sexual awakening. I saw Cameron Diaz in that red dress.
Oh, my Lord.
As well as your uncle?
Yeah. What?
No, it's blue, the one he wears for me. Yeah.
And when are we going to skip back in time to, Mark?
Bang in the middle, 1985.
We are indeed. And it's my topic choice this time. I've gone for a simple one, a fun one, one that I think the social media is going to go crazy for. What are your top three favourite aliens in cinema history?
I like that.
Yeah. I bet you've already got ideas swimming around your heads.
Going crazy.
Yeah, it'll be narrowing it. Yeah, it'll be narrowing it down to three. That's what's going to be
tough. That's the big thing.
Indeed. Our review next time. Now, we're going to be reviewing the new film from highbrow auteur Terrence Malick. We're going to be reviewing The Knight of Cups. Now, long-time listeners of this show will know what we think of Terrence Malick and highbrow auteurs in general.
Pretentious.
Pretentious, chai latte drinking, scarf wearing shit. The Tree of
Beret
Life.
Wearing.
We all agree that The Tree of Life, despite what you know people say, is one of the worst pieces of shit, ponderous nonsense we've ever seen. And by all accounts, from reviews I've already read, Knight of Cups is even worse shit, ponderous nonsense.
I love the fact that you told us last time, which I didn't know, that some scenes are just pure improvised and they left the camera and that's fine.
Malick basically points a camera at Christian Bale and goes, just do it. Just go for your guns. Have it.
And then Christian Bale proceeds to spend half an hour screaming at a lighting technician.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. That's just what I wanted to capture on camera.
Yeah.
Dick.
So this is going to be an interesting one. So tune in for that.
We need to sell some. Oh, we've got a competition. People aren't going to tune in just for that.
Well, we're giving away some Neighbours 2 malarkey.
Yep, Bad Neighbours. Yeah. Not Neighbours 2. That would be like Harold Bishop goodies and stuff like that.
Oh, I thought you meant The Neighbours, the Tommy Wiseau.
In America, it is called Neighbours. In here, in Britain, it's called Bad Neighbours.
Bad Neighbours 2.
Because they didn't want to confuse it with the shit Australian song.
Oh, it's not shit. I spent years of my childhood watching that.
And your uncle.
What is it with you and uncles today?
Just letting people know about your uncle.
Is there something you want to tell us about your childhood? And before you do, just remember, it's not your fault.
No, literally.
It's not your fault.
I just want people to know.
Adam,
it's not your fault. I just think Mark's uncle should be brought to trial.
See you in 2 weeks.
Thank you very much. Rock and roll.